everyone. This is your weekly discussion of comics and other pop culture. Your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. I am Robbie Dorman.
And I'm Eric Z. Goodnight.
And this is episode number 6.
So you don't know what that is in Spanish, do you? You don't remember.
It gets fuzzy after 5. Seis? Yes, seis. I remember.
Siete, and we're gonna have a party when we get to Ocho.
Well, Ocho does deserve a party, I think.
We're gonna have an Ocho party.
An Ocho party. We'll have mitza.
Yes, we will have mitza. Is that what you're gonna check in with? Is mitza?
No, I'm not gonna check in with that. We're gonna go right in to checking in.
Checked.
We're gonna cut right to the chase. I'm gonna
roll right into it.
I'm gonna go first because I have something I want to talk about.
I'm raring to go.
I'm raring. I'm checking in this week with we've covered this in the past podcast, but I've recently moved to South Florida. And so I'm slowly exploring local comic shops. I looked into the closest one to me. It's not bad. A little small, but, you know, most comic shops aren't huge these days. But
What's the name of it?
The local one is, Docking Bay.
Docking Bay. That's kind of unusual name for a comic book store. It's not like it's not something about something blowing up or
no.
It's not the Android's Dungeon.
No, it's not the Android's Dungeon. Even though it was stocked by people who looked like they belong in the Android's Dungeon,
that's perfectly fine.
That is perfectly.
We keep them in local comic book stores.
We do. They had a really good selection of trades though for such a small shop. And they had some a nice amount of tables if you'd like for gaming. So it looked
sweet.
But I don't know how often I'll go back there for another 10 minutes. Because I'm really checking in is with the place I've been recommended by all the people I know who live down here. And it's called Tate's Comic Shop. It's near Lauderdale. It's called in Lauder Hill, which is basically Fort Lauderdale, but it's inland. It's another 10 minutes west of the beach. And I was going to check it out anyway. But we kind of did that this weekend. We kind of explored, but we went here because they had a Peter Panzerfaust signing, which we are reviewing the newest issue this week. And I thought, well, that seems like a good opportunity to check out the shop and meet some comic creators. So we went. The place is awesome. It's honestly the best comic shop I've ever been in.
I think it's worth pointing out when you say we, you're not including me.
No, I'm not talking about...
I'm not part of that unit.
Myself and Kim. Eric is not close.
Wait, who's
to
Kim?
I hate you. Myself and Kim, we went to Tate's. It's really cool. It's huge. They have tons of everything. They have toys, figures, minifigs, blank boxes where they have, Futurama, Simpsons, the ones where you don't know what you're getting, which is dangerous because I buy those things like candy.
Just keep giving them to me when you get duplicates.
I have a fry waiting for you, actually.
So I need two fries. I'm gonna paint one so it's Bizarro fry.
Exactly. It can be
that would be awesome. Why don't I do that? Give it to me.
Yes, exactly. but they have figures, toys, they have statues, tons of trades, tons of current comics. I mean, they have a whole section dedicated to all ages books for younger readers. They have entire section dedicated to indie books, not just Image or Dark Horse, but small press stuff that you don't see at all. In other shops, you'll never see it. They have a whole section dedicated just to comic art and art books in general, which I know Eric would be super interested in. They have a boutique upstairs, which just sells art and, little novelty gag stuff. Plus, they had, a Flintstones toy bank from the 70s, which is really neat. But this apparently, and they do, their art upstairs, they do it by in stages. This they do a month and a half maybe, where they do a theme, and the theme this month or this time was for starting your art collection on a budget. Everything was under $100. The next one is, it's really interesting, is all the art's gonna be based on the golden early young readers, the golden books you get the little kids read. All the art is gonna be based on that. Mm-hmm. A little, and so, and then and they display it all and they sell it. And like a lot of the stuff is sold. I mean, like probably 75% of it was already sold. I guess they keep it up until the end of the show, and then then the people pick it up. But they had a signing for Peter Panzerfaust, Curtis J. Weib, and Tyler Jenkins were there. They were super nice to me. I bought the first trade and had them sign it. I talked about the podcast. They said it was really cool. That was reviewing the issue. But yeah, this is a really awesome shop. They have a gaming store a couple doors down too, which is really cool. I mean, anyone who gets a chance to go should definitely go there.
Sounds awesome.
I'll be taking Eric whenever he deigns important enough to visit me.
Yes. Wistful sigh.
Wistful sigh. Eric, what are you checking in with?
I think the only things worth checking in about happened to me today.
That's one.
Not that, like, I mean, I've just been working a lot, and it's been terribly dull. Maybe something like 65 hours this week, probably more.
Only 65?
Only 65,
God,
but...
you're so lazy.
Things have happened, but for respect for the people involved, I'm not going to talk about them. But today has been pretty fun. Finally caught up on floppies, went to the old Cafe Hay where they were playing the Final Fantasy VI soundtrack, and I had fun talk about that because I've been playing through it recently. I don't know, there was tooling around on the Oya and a lot of Final Fantasy VI. There really was something. I'm going to remember it later when we're talking about Brian Lee O'Malley fighting Alan Moore. This shit writes itself, people.
It's time for the news brief. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love yes.
It's good to throw them in there.
Yeah. This week, not too eventful. The only thing that stood out to me is Marvel released their September solicits, and looks like they're going to be canceling Gambit, Journey into Mystery, and X-Factor. Both Gambit and Journey into Mystery are not huge surprises. They've both been pretty low sellers, and Journey into Mystery especially has been, like, it debuted with a high number, and was in was a spinoff from a low selling book in the first place. So actually, that it existed at all is saying something. X Factor is not surprising either, but mainly because it seemed like Peter David. The arc that they've been doing right now is called the End of X Factor. So it's not surprising that they're actually ending X Factor soon. And I know Peter David, he just had a stroke, so I imagine he wants to ease off his workload, you know, after. So I know he's still recovering. I think it's noteworthy to mention that X Factor is ending finally, because, you know, it's been running for his run. The most recent run has been 7 years, and he's done the whole thing, which in this day and age doesn't happen that often. And you put all his time together, because he started it, you know, when they first started the book in the early 90s, he wrote it the first couple years of that, too. So he's wrote this book for over 10 years, really. And with a lot of the same characters. I mean, he's used Multiple Man and Wolfsbane and Strong Guy, Eric's favorite. He loves Strong Guy.
I was going to say, he's really called Strong Guy.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that, with X Factor. Yeah. He's called Strong Guy.
His name is Strong Guy. He's a funny character, so it works.
I think if I ever have a son, I'm going to name him Strong Guy, so he can be Strong Guy Goodnight.
That'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You should do that.
It was like my friend that, she told me I need to name I need to have a son and name him Slayer. His name would be Slayer Alan Goodnight.
That'd be again. You can't. It's hard to go wrong with your last name. Your name is your last name. Your surname is beautiful.
It is.
And strong and interesting.
Yes.
It's everything. Everything just you could like possibly. Me. Just like you.
Yes.
You draw your name. Your power from your name.
I do.
So if we ever change your name, it's like your hair. Like Samson had his
just
hair.
Just like Samson. If you ever cut my name,
name.
I lose power.
Lose power. So don't
cut my name.
Don't cut his name.
Especially not when I'm sleeping.
I really love X-Factor. I'm a fan of Peter David's run on it. I was going to mention that one of my favorite issues, single issues of comics ever, is one of his run. It's number 87. It's kind of sad to see it end, even though it's kind of on good terms, really. But I'm sure those characters are all going to... You'll see him appear in other places. But yeah, Eric, you have any thoughts, X-Factor?
It's very wistful. No, I have never read it. I couldn't even tell you what characters were in X-Factor, so...
Well, you know Multiple Man.
I do know Multiple Man, because we just read about him. We read about him being in it a little bit, and I now know Strong Guy. I think I might have actually read a little bit of X-Factor in the 90s.
Yeah, in the original X... The very, very first X-Factor was the original five X-Men. Mm-hmm. When they had been, you know, this is after the X-Men team had been expanded, you know, a couple hundred times. And it seemed like a novel idea to put them back together. You know, and X-Factor was just them. But then after, like, it got rebooted again, that's when it started adding in these lesser-known people like Multiple Man, Strong Guy, Wolfsbane, Richter.
I probably have read a couple of these books when I was a kid, so, yeah.
And then it also featured a gay relationship with Richter and Shatterstar, which Rob Liefeld was not happy with, because Shatterstar is his creation. And then Peter David made him gay.
Good. I want to see Rob Liefeld cry.
He was upset. I think it's funny.
Good. Fuck Rob Liefeld and his being homophobic. Screw that.
Yes, I know. I agree.
I think that is... I don't know. That's positive in my eyes, because one, that's breaking down some boundaries, and two, it upset Rob Liefeld.
Anything that upsets Rob Liefeld is
yes,
a positive.
Like if Rob Liefeld steps in gum, I'm like, yes, thank you, whoever spit that out on the ground.
And bringing up Rob Liefeld, there's a thread on I read yesterday on comic book Reddit, and I thought it was really interesting about, like, it was a quote about, who was it from? A respectable person. Mm-hmm. Respectable comics person. And they're mm-hmm. like, and it was about Rob Liefeld earlier in his career, and they're like, they really thought he had promise. They're like, if he keeps working on this stuff, he is going to be someone, you know, he's going to be a legend in the comics industry.
Well, I mean, he is a legend now.
He's just then work on anything. He draws exactly the same as when he did 20 years ago.
You need to send him, Hogarth's Dynamic Hands, a copy of that.
He'd probably just go, I don't need this shit.
Yeah, well, he has survived for a long time without...
changing at all.
Well, I was going to say without drawing hands.
That as well, yeah.
It's because he can always draw, like, some smoke in front of those hands, or draw all the hands off the panel, or draw some pouches in front of the hands.
Or pouches for hands.
Yeah, pouch hands.
Pouch hands. That's going to... He's going to show up...
It was gun hands. That's how we solved the problem.
Gun hands. And, well, that's in the... In issue 5 of Death Pouch... The guy with Pouchy, we called him. Mm-hmm. He shows up in issue 5 of Death Pouch.
I think we need to do a random character generator after we get a good dozen or so of these done, where we do like a
crossover.
I was going to say like a crisis.
Crisis, like, on infinite random character generators.
Yes, exactly. Like where everyone interacts, and yeah.
And then they all die, and we start over.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I just had to tease that out there so everyone can get excited.
They're probably all titillated now.
I'm sure that's the exact word I would use.
That's a good word. So that's it for News Brief this week. I know you guys loved it. The next is Weekly Floppies. I know it makes Eric laugh, so that never gets tiring to me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So,
it totally doesn't.
First up this week in Weekly Floppies is Superman Unchained number 1 Deluxe Edition, 6,000 pages, double pages everywhere. It's craziness.
Mine wasn't quite that long.
It wasn't 6,000?
Did I get cheated?
You got cheated regardless of which edition you bought, because it was kind of overpriced, but...
It really was.
Especially if you buy it digitally, because it was $5, I believe, and mainly I think it was $5 because it had you in the middle of the book. There's these gigantic. You see like one image, and then it zooms in, and then it zooms out like gigantically. And in the in the paper edition, there's like these giant fold out, you know, things.
I was figuring it had to be like some poster sized, like 4 pages or something like that.
Yeah, and it caught Jim Lee only can draw on posters.
That sounds good. I forget that I'm looking at Jim Lee. I just think that I'm looking at DC.
That's true. This is written by Scott Snyder and penciled by Jim Lee with Scott Williams and Dustin Nguyen.
What else have we read by Snyder?
He actually wrote Batman this week as well.
Oh, okay.
We read a previous Batman that's written by Snyder, and The Wake last week.
Ah, yeah,
was also written by Snyder. He's pretty busy, pretty man, busy man. Book was released to coincide with the release of Man of Steel, the movie.
Yes,
and I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a Superman I like. You know, he's strong and capable, caring for other people, like.
Not a huge douchebag, not, as we're hoping.
Not a huge douchebag like he is in a lot of other DC books at the moment. You see Lex Luthor, apparently is excellent at origami.
Yes, naturally.
You see Jimmy Olsen, who is wearing a fedora for some reason.
Well, I mean, he's like a 20-year-old hipster photographer, come on.
That's true, he would wear a fedora, I guess.
He would be fedora-ing it up.
But, I mean, I like the art is, I mean, for all the crap we give Jim Lee.
Yeah, the man is capable and talented. I just don't particularly care for it. But to be honest, I think it's some of my favorite Jim Lee work that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious he worked hard on this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has, I mean, he's worked. We talked about Liefeld earlier, who hasn't developed his craft at all. It's obvious Jim Lee has, over the years, gotten better at drawing. All the things that he used to be really bad at, you know, he's worked on and made them less flawed in his in all the years he's worked on in comics.
Like an artist is supposed to do.
Yes, like any craftsman, really. You'd think you try and improve yourself.
You should give a shit.
It's really well plotted, and you get a really cool mystery at the end that they tease in the beginning. I like the little epilogue at the end too. It kind of. What do you think, Eric? I know you say you like it. You think it's worth the $5?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it's worth the $5, but I mean, if you really like Superman comics, it's certainly worth it.
Yeah.
If you really like Jim Lee, it's certainly worth it. I think that I was not expecting to like it. I found it very well written. I enjoyed the art much more than I thought I would. I didn't even think about it being Jim Lee. I'm just like, okay, I enjoy this, and I don't usually enjoy Jim Lee. I really should have noticed that it was Jim Lee.
But
I only got to reading just a little while ago. I've been a little running behind.
Yes, my only nitpicks here are Lois Lane apparently, like, in the Minority Report for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's, like, editing a newspaper. That's the only thing that stuck out to me as, like, not believable. Because newspapers are not a successful business, anymore.
Well, that's kind of the problem with newspapers, is they're not very technologically advanced.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, it really stuck out that she's doing all this editing with, like, this super advanced Minority Report holographic screens where you flip things around and move stuff just by touching them. You know, these holographic images. But it's a newspaper that's going to end up on paper. And yes. I don't understand.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is that, you know, that's in this sexy science fiction, you know, world with all these superheroes in it. They can't just show it the way an actual newspaper works, which is not sexy and not science fiction-y, and it's chained to chained to a very old style of you know. Sending out information, you know, print is not really. It's dumb, and this is coming from a printer.
Yes. I don't know why when they rebooted, I don't understand why they didn't just change it to something like an online
publication, like a news blog,
or you know, like a HuffPost or something along those lines.
You could incorporate all kinds of, you know, other things in there, like I don't know, you could show
preparing
video and stuff like that. I don't have a clue. Whatever. I don't know.
I like that Superman's like a freelancer. He's not Clark Kent's not a employee of the planet. He's just a freelancer that turns in work, you know, occasionally. I don't think Clark Kent didn't ring, I don't know, super true to me either. Maybe I just like a dorkier Clark Kent, I think. You know, the more awkward. He didn't seem too... He seemed like a... He's wearing a hoodie.
That's too cool for you?
I think so. I think he's too cool.
It isn't an executive pinstriped hoodie.
No, so it's not.
It's at least a step down from that.
I think I just measure my Clark Kent from the Clark Kent and All-Star Superman, which is, I guess, too high of a standard. I probably shouldn't do that.
Why don't I remember that?
You've read it. I know you have.
Of course I have. I just...
Because he's like...
Wait, you said an all-star Superman?
Yeah, he's like he's bumbling, but he's like, he does things while people sing it. Like, he does... Okay. But...
Yes. The Grant Morrison.
Yes, Grant Morrison.
Yeah, and you said that, and I thought about the brief moments that Superman was in the All-Star Batman
and Robin. Oh, my God, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awful. No, the Morrison quietly All-Star Superman,
Superman.
Yes, which is great. And I guess I just hold... The Superman I have no problem with. It's the Clark Kent kind of thing. That's it's nitpicky, really. It's nothing wrong. It's just this.
Barely in it, though.
Yeah, it's the new 52 Clark Kent. And he's better than he is in the other Superman books, where he's, you know, not necessarily a nice person all the time. And I think that's really the main thing about Superman, other than his, like, he has every power, is that he's, like, always nice. He's the nicest. I guess $5 is pretty steep for a comic book these days. And the fact that they included, you know, 5 pages of interviews with Snyder and Lee at the end, I don't see the need for that. It's a Superman comic book. It's not like a landmark event. They treat it like it was one, but... And 5 less pages might make it slightly cheaper, but...
If they don't take it that seriously, who else is going to?
Every single person who writes a comics book blog or reviews comics or talks about comics and loves Superman, which is still a lot of people.
Yes, well, I think you sort of missed what I said.
Oh, we're using sarcasm?
Moving on.
So, I'm saying that Superman Unchained number 1 is very, very good. I just don't think it's necessarily worth $5. Eric, your consensus?
I can more or less agree with that. Yeah, I'm happy to have read it.
Yeah, it's good comic. It's good comic, but I think we should always.
That's what the guy with the English degree says.
English degree.
English degree.
I think the price should always be included in the discussion because people are paying expensive.
That's real money, y'all.
Expensive habit. So moving on to the second DC book of the week is Batman number 21, written by Scott Snyder and pencils by Greg Capullo with Danny Meekie. This is the very first issue of the 0 year 12 issue maxi arc, I guess you want to call it. Basically, the New 52 retelling of Batman's origin. I have very mixed feelings about this.
Really?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me about your feelings?
My feelings? The first few pages where you see that the subway's flooded, you know, Gotham is, like, over half of Gotham is overrun with weeds. Like, people are fishing.
People are fishing in the subway.
In the subway with spears. Because
it's actually not that abnormal for people to fish.
And it's not people with normal fish. It's abnormal to be fishing in a city in the subway.
That is indeed abnormal.
Yes.
It is AB normal.
And then, you know, and this little girl's being attacked by these two gang guys, and they're trying to, you know, I don't know what they're trying to do, steal her fish. Then Batman drives up on his motorcycle, it's all muddy, he's like all rough and tumble, with his purple gloves and
torn sleeves
and a backpack, and he's like Indiana Jones Batman, kind of.
Yeah.
Tomb Raider Batman, and that is, I love that. That whole intro.
Oh yeah, that got me hooked for real.
Yeah. I really like it. This whole thing with the whole scene with him in the truck and the fake mask on.
Mm-hmm.
And argue, and then, I mean, the action is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the Red Hood and that whole gang, kind of that, you know, taken from that, from that, all that content from DC history and using it. But it's Batman, right? He's still Batman. This is not Batman-y to me. And the fact he comes out of the water and flips him off, and then it's censored, that is really corny. It just seems corny. Batman doesn't flip people off. He doesn't care, to me. It doesn't seem out of character to you? I know it's young Batman, but it says 5 months earlier. Has he changed that much in 5 months? I don't know. That scene really bothers me. I really like the little interstitial with young... I like the young Bruce Wayne scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The little kid Bruce Wayne, those are really cool. You see old Gotham City, and he's just wandering around. But then you got, like you referred to him in an earlier episode, like Pretty Boy Bruce Wayne.
Where are we at?
Right where he's like holding weights upside down.
Upside down, yeah.
With Alfred, and
mm-hmm.
and he's so pretty.
He is so pretty.
And, you know.
Pretty Bruce.
Yeah, and he's got all these masks everywhere. And I guess he's not technically Batman yet, because he doesn't have... He's only wearing these, you know, alter egos and stuff. But I don't... Maybe we're going to go through this discovery process where he suddenly becomes less annoying. I don't know, just...
I don't have that big a problem with it.
I don't know.
You're saying is, like, kind of shocking to me, because
really?
I kind of like what they're doing here.
Okay.
What was it I was thinking about? Like, I think that Marvel has they're doing their books up so big, and everything is so huge, and DC is kind of making it like cheesier and more comic booky, you know?
Yes.
Like everything is in bright neon colors, you know, and they're not writing out the stuff that's ridiculous, you know. It's a very different approach, and I think that, you know, the humor, like the sense, I mean, it's more like an all ages book, you know. It's more like youth appropriate, and for Batman, that's probably really important.
Yeah, I mean, I like the story. And I like how what they're setting into place for the new history of, you know, Wayne, of course, playing into it. It's kind of become part of the thing where Wayne Enterprises is as important as Batman.
Yeah.
Kind of. They bring in the big penny,
mm-hmm.
of course, and then you have a debut. The debut at the end of the, I think that's it.
I don't think it's really that big a secret.
Yeah, you get the Riddler, the first Edward Nygma. He's not the Riddler yet, but you obviously...
Wait, Edward Nygma is the Riddler?
I don't believe it. Yeah, he only has that
giant... Mr. Enigma?
Enigma. With his question mark cane. And lines against all across the... I like his pants. He has high-waisted pants.
He does, wearing them at his natural waist.
I do not like... what about the backup? Do you like the backup story where he learns his driving ability, apparently?
I thought it was ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
I did enjoy it.
It's really silly.
It is, and the twist ending, when he's like, ta-da, I'm a good guy, really.
And then this guy, he reminded me of Zach from Dead or Alive.
Which guy?
The Miguel, the driver, the guy who teaches him, I guess, the criminal.
Zach from Dead or Alive.
Have you played Dead or Alive games? I thought
not,
you had.
Not enough.
He's like this very flamboyant black guy with a big hair.
Oh, wait, you mean the guy that is Dennis Rodman?
Yes, basically. He kind of reminds me of him.
Okay.
I just don't, I didn't care for it that much.
It's okay. You didn't, the primary story all that much.
No, but that's the thing. I like. I really do like it. It's just there's parts of it that I really don't like. It's hard for me to
I think it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah, I don't feel guilty. I'm just...
You should feel guilty, but not for that.
But, and, do you like Greg Capullo? Do you like the art in this?
Huh? Yeah, it's not bad. It doesn't, blow me away. It's with a lot of this, main art we've looked at in DC books that it looks competent, but it doesn't get me excited. Although I do think that, like, the first, the hook section at the beginning of the book...
Yeah.
It's almost like he spent most of his time doing it, because it's really gorgeous, and then the rest of it falls a little flat. Although there's some solid work in here, it's just not terribly exciting.
No, it's competent.
Well, I would call it better than competent.
Okay, better than, yeah, you're right. Still, it is better still, than that. I do.
That's kind of why I'm drawn to the story at the end. The
Raphael.
The, yeah.
That's drawn by it's the art. The book. The story is by the backup story is Snyder and James Tynion IV, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the art is by Raphael Albuquerque, which is distinctly different art style.
You have to take a left at him, by the way.
Left at Albuquerque?
You have to take a left at Raphael Albuquerque.
I see what you did there.
I did do something, didn't I?
But yeah,
I think in comparison, this art is a lot more dynamic and expressive. And
yeah, I like this. It's like a greaser Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, greaser Bruce Wayne. That's what I want to see.
I kind of like him a little bit better than Pretty Boy Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, for super reals.
Super reals.
For super reals.
We ain't kidding around this week, folks. Yeah. It was super real. So would you recommend this book, Eric?
I enjoyed it. I really did, and it seems like you're not so high on it.
No, I would say buy it and read it.
Well, that is a recommendation.
So I'm recommending it with a, but there's these things that probably will get cleared up as Bruce Wayne becomes Batman. Because as long as like he starts like becoming the guy that's in those first six pages or whatever, because I love that, like him being just a Batman. Like he's the way he talks to the little girl and acts like Batman to me. That's perfect.
Yeah,
it's just the whole kind of gang there, I guess, is the problem. Which is it is an origin story. I guess I shouldn't complain too much. You have to be patient. You need to be patient.
I think that for a first issue, it's doing everything right.
For an origin, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting hooked in there. I want to know what happens next. It's setting up everything right. It's got me interested. You know, it's setting the time bomb. I'm digging it.
All right.
I would actually recommend it.
Okay, I would recommend it as well, but with a caveat.
I would recommend it with caviar. I don't know. I just wanted to say something.
Caviar.
Recommend it with a caviar.
It is Bruce Wayne, so he's rich.
You gotta be all fancy.
He can afford caviar.
He can.
We're moving on to the Marvel section of our weekly floppies. And we're starting off. It was tough for me to pick books this week for Marvel.
You picked some good ones.
Yeah. Venom. We did Venom as well. I read Venom on my own.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good too.
Is it?
Yeah.
I liked where it was going.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'm glad we're going right into Thor, aren't we?
Thor, yes. Thor, God of Thunder number 9, which this is amazing. I love this. Yeah, I love all of it.
Well, I feel, I don't know if it was particularly, if it was just because it was better than the last one. I don't know that it was, but I think that since now, like, I'm a little bit deeper into the story, I actually enjoy this a lot. If you remember, I was kind of so-so.
Yes.
On the last one.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's basically the three Thors, you know, young, brash Thor, modern, sensible Thor, and old, like, full of regret Thor, King Thor, have finally joined forces in full and are going to battle with Gore the God Butcher. And it does not disappoint. There is scene after scene after scene. Here it is, my favorite line in this whole thing. Gore is throwing chunks of moon at them. and King Thor says, "My Mjolnir finds that amusing. How about yours?" And Avenger Thor goes, "Can't you hear it laughing?"
Yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's so great. It's so Thor-y.
It's
and then we get the return of the space shark that shoots purple stuff out of his face, apparently.
I mean, why wouldn't it?
Why wouldn't it? But in swinging of hammers, and you get even some character, you get some character insight from into Gore and into Thor, the modern day Avenger Thor, really. It's really cool. God, it's so epic. And I mean, it's all for a book that's almost all action. You do get a lot of character, you get a lot of depth and story in it. And
I think that I was going to say it's probably the only book that you could describe as epic and awesome, and it wouldn't quite be hyperbole, because it's what it's setting out to do.
Yeah, that is its goal, and it achieves it, because it's like war between gods and a god butcher in space.
Yeah.
They go into a sun, a star,
yes,
and do battle inside of one.
It's a pretty sexy book.
Yeah, the art, again, it's Esad Ribic, hopefully.
Esad Ribic, yeah.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing it correctly still. Again, his
If it doesn't, he style, can send us a, he can send us a nasty letter.
He can, and his style, again, it works perfectly for this book, and it's gorgeous.
Well, he's crushing it, for sure. I like it a lot better than the last book. Which was just, this one is a lot of, I don't know what it was. It was the last one was more subtle situations and characters talking.
This is
big action and huge things happening, and he works out just perfect for it. It's really beautiful and artfully done. So nothing but love for this book for me.
Yeah, exactly. I want to pick something else, you know, put a spotlight on another book, but this is so damn good. I want to make Eric read it. I know Eric's not going to seek this stuff out by himself. So I want to make him read it. I have to make him read it. So definitely, if you're not reading this, go read it now. Go pick it up. It's great.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Next book is Savage Wolverine number 6, which it's the start of a new arc. The first one was full, you know, just Wolverine in the Savage Land. And this is kind of shown that this book pretty much is going to be a not strong continuity book. It's going to be, you know, adventures that are kind of out of continuity or set in different times. It doesn't really matter. You don't need to know what Wolverine's up to these days. It's just, you know, fun times with Wolverine. The first arc was set in the Savage Land. This is set in, you know, New York City and dealing with the Hand, you know, ninjas and Elektra. I really liked it. I mean, I love Wolverine's one of my favorite. I mean, isn't as a kid, and everyone loves Wolverine as a kid. But you know, even now, I really like the character, and I really like the fact that they're doing a book where he's just, you know, Wolverine Adventure Time, basically just doing whatever, you know, going on one set of an arc, and then we move on to another creator. They tell their different story altogether. It's a lot of fun. It's really, you get to see Wolverine, you know, be Wolverine, basically. I really like his interactions with Spider-Man. And you get Peter Parker Spider-Man. It's set before Doc Ock stupidity. You get, you know, Peter Parker.
That didn't even occur to me, because I look at Peter Parker Spider-Man.
That's Spider-Man.
It's not retarded Spider-Man.
It's not retarded. And, like, they even make a little note on the first page. Like, yes, yeah. I know, this is not normal Spider-Man. And... because people, I guess, pick at that.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy that it's set before that that Spider-Man stupidity. You get some good Kingpin moments in here, like Kingpin rage and everything.
God, I love the Kingpin.
The Kingpin.
Yeah.
You like this? From what your little comments are, it seems like you liked it.
I'm high on this book. I'm happy about it. One of the things that I'm the happiest about is Joe Madura. It is Joe Madura.
Yes.
Crazy. Yeah, Joe Madura. He's someone that I have disliked most of my life. And, well, I mean, seriously, I have never really cared for his art. And see all these drawings of, like, Red Monica and, you know, that era Joe Madura. And very recently, a friend of mine introduced me to some of his newer art, you know, from the past couple of years, and I'm like, wow, this is really excellent, and he's developed a lot of subtlety, and I think I'm actually a fan now. Like, this is, I love the way this book looks.
Yeah,
I would draw this way, and that's saying something. Like, I really like what he's doing. He's he's come a long way. He's grown a lot, and just, I don't know. For someone to go from, like, I actively dislike their work to I actually strongly enjoy it. That's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, and the story itself is also really, it's interesting. Yeah,
absolutely. You get this,
I mean, the hand and Elektra and Kingpin, mm-hmm. you kind of go, oh, God, again? And, yeah. But they've added, you get this kind of a new mysterious businessman figure, mm-hmm. and then these creepy kind of, even kind of horror characters at the end that represent the hand even, and it's really... You get a good mix of action and, you know, funny moments with Spider-Man and Wolverine character moments and everything. There's some comedy. It's got everything. It's really good.
I think it's weird that it's got both of Wolverine's costumes in this.
Yeah, it's true. Of course,
I don't understand why they would do both. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Half of it did get burned away.
That's his spare.
That's his spare. You know, in the beginning of the book, he gets set on fire by some you know, supervillain that they've captured. He's as an Avenger. I love his little bitch fest with Captain America. Wolverine wants to kill this guy because he burned off half of his fucking face, and Captain America's like, come on, dude, put away your claws. I am Captain America. Everyone's like telling him to do something about his face. It's good. But he's got, like, six costumes. He can switch back and forth whenever.
He has six.
He's got tons of costumes. You got the two primary ones. You know, you got the yellow.
Yeah, the yellow and blue, and then the brownish one.
The brownish one. Yeah. But then you got his Uncanny X-Force one, versions 1 and 2. I mean,
yes, that's right.
He's been in... Every team's a part of, he has to have a different costume. So he's probably got him in his closet somewhere, and he disguises and goes, oh, what am I doing today?
He's got six of them, one for each button, jab, strong, fierce.
Exactly. You want to change your costume up, it's like Borderlands. You got to go customize your face and your body, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm talking about. But, it's video games. That's going on the same tangent. But yeah, Savage Wolverine, I went into this not knowing what to expect, but I really liked it. It was a lot of fun.
I'm quite pleased by it, and I'm glad I get to read a Madura book and say good things about it. I'm very happy with this book.
And as a side note, I'm going to say this real quickly. I also read Venom this week by myself. Mm-hmm. I would recommend this week's Venom as well.
So I should pick it up.
I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
Okay. And finally this week we have Peter Pan's number 11. I was kind of like, you know, I every week I go through the books and trying to pick out what we're gonna read, and I was sitting there with Kim. Kim's my girlfriend, Eric. And,
oh wait, who's Kim? I missed that opportunity.
That's why I said it. And she's like, what is Peter Panzerfaust? I'm like, that's a good question. I clicked on it, and it said, oh, Starving New York, perfect time to jump on. So I was like, all right, we'll give it a shot. And then, again, I mentioned that I went to the signing at Tate's.
You did indeed mention that.
I went back and I read the first 10 issues, and it's really good. And it gave me a little bit of backstory when I'm reading 11, but you don't necessarily need it, although it helps. But basically, the premise is Peter Pan, if he is a World War II resistance fighter in France, and the Lost Boys are right there with him, and then, of course, Captain Hook is a German military dude, Captain Haken.
I think that's what they called them.
German military dudes,
yeah.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah, I think that is, that's historically accurate.
Is it? I thought it was. Yeah. That's yeah. like that's when you.
I
like,
watch
go,
a lot of the History Channel, so
and they go like
it's indisputable.
They go like Adolf Hitler, that German military dude.
Yeah, German military dude. He's the Führer dude too.
He's the Führer dude. But in this issue, it's a start of a new arc. Peter Pan and the boys are kind of ingrained as resistance fighters, and now they're a different. The whole series is set in kind of flashbacks. You kind of get that with the guy interviewing the dude in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get it. Every arc has a different narrator. So this one, they're fighting and killing Germans in France wilderness in the snow. And the Curtis is telling the story now, and he is one of the more bloodthirsty of the gang. He was actually captured and they rescued him in the last arc. But it's really, really fun. I enjoy this. I mean, I have more insight than Eric did because I read the.
Yeah, I think that you've got some more. Yeah, you've got some more background in it. For me, just looking at this book, to be perfectly honest, I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would read any more of it.
Really?
I didn't hate it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not too terribly drawn in. I mean, I like it. I think it's got a lot of good art, and I think that it's an interesting enough concept. But I'm not quite as high on it as you are.
I think it's mainly because of what I've read the first two.
That has a lot to do with it, for sure.
Yeah, because I went back and read them. I'm like, well, and starting from the beginning, it you get a lot more. You get more attached to these characters than just, you know, your one issue glance at them.
Right.
Yeah. I especially like the fact that we're getting Hook's hunters. They're going to be chasing them, I guess, through the woods. Which that idea really intrigues me. That we get, you know. Because they've already had a couple showdowns with Hook.
You've really gotten pretty deep into this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's 10 issues, but there's a lot happens in those 10 issues. Yeah. And there's a couple lulls in it. I mean, it's not. I wouldn't say it's my favorite book out right now, but it's good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. You liked it. You said you liked the art. Did you this style?
Yeah, it's a little weird. I guess it's Peter. He kind of looks like Mac tonight.
With the hair, the big
with the hair and the giant. Actually, he looks like Conan O'Brien.
He kind of does, yeah. He kind of looks like a very young somewhere, Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, somewhere between Mac Tonight and Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, but the hair it helps because it's distinctive and sets him apart.
Yeah, they need all the other guys. I think they need more of that. For me, like coming into this, the characters aren't quite distinct enough.
Yeah,
I don't know who's who and what's going on.
Yeah, that's
that would help me.
One of my main complaints of it as well is that, you know, everyone has to kind of dress the same because they're
army guys. They all have to dress like army guys.
Yes, and I mean you do got the guy
army dudes.
Army dudes. Yeah. Hey, Eric, get it right. Army dudes.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Use the preferred nomenclature.
Preferable nomenclature. Yes.
You got Peter Han's hair, and you got some of the other guys have, you know, distinctive hairstyles or distinctive hats or whatever. And there's Tiger Lily is married to Afro Dude, by the way.
Didn't know that.
Afro Dude, he's in here. You see him? I'm not gonna give you his name because you won't remember his name. But you see the guy with the Afro?
Mm-hmm. I do.
You'll see. I think the back of Tiger Lily at some point. They're married.
Oh. Okay.
You see, there's a page. I think it's page 19.
Yes.
Yes, they're married. Tyra Lily is. That's you see her back. She's pointing guns at some German soldiers.
Some army dudes.
Some army dudes.
Yep.
Yeah. Then the other older guys are like actual resistance fighters that are. Did you? I would say this one issue is okay. It's really intrigues me at the end with the addition of all these grizzly dudes with beards.
They are all bearded.
They're all bearded grizzly dudes and look like they're gonna
I was gonna say they look like the rooftop concert Beatles.
Yeah, I was gonna say they look like Black Sabbath. Of course, Ozzy never had a beard, but, you know, the rest of the guys. But they look like Black Sabbath to me. But there it looks like, you know, we're going to have some cat and mouse in the woods with Peter Pan's gang and the hunters, which that idea really intrigues me. This one issue, the story is okay. I would honestly recommend to go back and read the first two arcs because they're really good. And there's some really good moments in them involving World War II. And, you know, retrospectives, because it, you know, goes back and forth between the present day and the past. And I would say do that before you read this, if you're going to do it. Eric,
I know you don't... recommend. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I know you haven't read, and I I understand if you have it not being super super good on this book if you hadn't read the if you hadn't come into it knowing any the history. I tried to give you a little bit of insight, like telling you Peter Pan as a World War II resistance fighter. Yeah. And even then,
but I think that just that in and of itself isn't enough to make it work, because the whole, you know, take an old public domain property and put it in semi-modern times is a pretty beat up idea at this point, but it's more about execution. And you say the was it the first one arc, or are there multiple
there's
arcs?
There's two arcs. There's two trades arcs. Out. Two trades out right now. I bought the first trade and got signed.
Yeah. Execution is far more important.
Exactly. Again, I heard the idea. I was like, well, that's interesting. Yeah. But you'd have to do it well. And the first two arcs really do set up the book very well. There's a couple little walls, but for the most part, it's very exciting.
Right.
Really. And it's a very, another venture-y book. It's like very like swashbuckling, as you would expect from Peter Pan. Yeah. They have all the characters, and you kind of it's unique how to see how they have a take on it. But I would say read everything. Don't if you're not going to jump in too well. They say, oh, it's starting new arc, you can jump right in. Comic book people lie. That's not true. You can't. No. You need to start from the beginning. Usually,
this is not something that I particularly enjoy.
Especially
jumping into.
Especially without a recap page. Or characters page.
Do you want to do this for the first books for long form? Would you recommend that?
Yeah, I would.
Maybe we can do that for 1 week and.
Okay.
I definitely feel like it's not fair for me to make up my mind about this based on this one issue. Like I feel, the competency in the writing.
Yeah.
And definitely in the art too. Like I think that it's like I'm not very high on it, but I don't think that it's not like so awful that I'm like, well, there's no potential in this. It's just like, well, this is the slow start of an arc, and I hear what you're saying about the, the first book. So, yeah.
I do want to point out something to you because this came to my attention because I was looking into the writer because I was meeting him.
Yeah,
and I didn't even mention it to him, but I forgot because if you go to the first ad after the book ends.
Yes.
Called Rat Queens.
Yes.
Did you see that?
I'm looking at it.
Yes. I didn't tell him. I really wanted to. That this is very exciting. This book looks amazing to me.
Okay.
I don't know. Oh, team
why
of four.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just looks. It's four female adventurers murdering orcs and like having drunken adventures. I don't see how that's not awesome.
I mean, I don't have a big problem with it.
No, I knew you wouldn't. That's, again...
I do like all of those elements.
All those things that... Yeah. So, I just wanted to get your take. I know you saw that. I was wondering if you liked it or the idea of it.
It makes me smile. I don't know that I would pick it up based on just that, but...
No, well, we're going to be...
Now that you pointed out that it's got everything that I like in it, it's like...
we're going to be reading it, so... In September. So a few months from now, but we will be definitely looking at that because it looks really cool.
Here's something that I'm pretty sure I've asked you already. Are you going to Dragon Con?
Yeah, I'm pretty. We're pretty sure we're going to.
Do we record on the road?
We can
have a special event.
We'll have a special Dragon Con recording session.
You just said September, and I'm like,
Yeah.
Things happen in September.
Yeah, we're gonna get our tickets. I was waiting in confirmation for my position, but yes. it looks like we're going to be. I'm going to have a job soon. So,
oh yeah,
yeah.
It's just you heard it, folks. This is where I found out.
Well, I was pretty sure that they were going to acquire it. I've been waiting on jobs for my company I used to work for is acquiring a place down here in South Florida, and I'd be working there. And so it looks like they're about 80%. So. Looks like it's going to happen. Just have to wait for everything to go through, and it looks like about another week, and I'm going to probably be starting. So
it seems really pretty quick. They're really motivated to get it done.
Yeah, and paychecks. So I'll start having paychecks again, and so we can afford to go on a vacation.
You can buy me more Futurama figures.
I can buy you all the Futurama figures. You can get 6 fries. Oh, I also wanted to tell you, this is one thing I really saw. I'd never seen these before. In Tate's, they had, all those blank money figures and stuff where you can buy, you buy the blank figures and paint whatever you want on them.
Right.
They have them like blank NES cartridges, basically.
Is this the So Analog cartridges?
I think so.
Yeah, I've been following that artist, like his God, for like a year and a half now. I remember that long ago. I have no idea how I found him, but I just suddenly found this sculptor that was making these NES cartridges, and I'm like, that looks awesome. And then he asked a bunch of his artist friends to make labels for him.
Yeah, those
looked amazing.
They have them for sale, and they have blank ones.
Well, and they have those at Daddy Cool's in St. Petersburg too.
I haven't seen them before. I was like very excited about that idea.
Yeah, they're in, I don't know, whatever cool places that sell, you know, the
nerdy things.
Well, not necessarily the nerdy things, but the what do you call them? The small toy manufacturers, the Kid Robot, the stuff like that.
Funkos, all the vinyl figures.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention that to you. But that is it for Weekly Floppies this week. It was lovely.
It was the floppiest.
And now coming up is your favorite segment and mine, the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz.
Yep. This is so, this is...
This is a good one. This is gold. Basically,
It's a gold mine.
Gold, yes. O'Malley mine.
A gold O'mine.
For those uninitiated, basically the premise is that one of us picks out three Brian Lee O'Malley tweets from the week and then inserts one of our own and then quizzes the other on if they can pick out which one is the fake.
Well, I think you're the one that follows him. I do not follow him. So
They're all
a surprise to me.
Yes,
we could in theory do this the other way around, but you might have an unfair advantage.
When I don't have a desk job to like have Twitter open all the time and distract me.
You are getting a job again. So
yes, so there we go.
You can't just read comics and whack off all day.
Hey, come on! You got to clean the pipes.
You can't. Congratulations.
Yes.
Yeah, I think let's golf clap.
Thank you. I write all my own material.
I know.
So I'm going to quiz Eric. We're going to see how well he does this week. The first time I stumped you.
You totally beat me.
Okay.
You defeated me.
I did. Let's try again. See,
I predict another shutout.
He has a 25% chance at random, so that's at worst. He has 25% chance.
It's probably also at best 26%.
Okay, so here we go. Eric, you ready?
I am as ready as I will ever be.
Good. Okay. So here's we got A. It's past my bedtime. My bedtime is 1 minute after I wake up in the morning.
That's so dumb.
B. Man, pizza is not a real thing.
What?
C. I am literally a peanut gallery. And D. Trigger warning, graphic tease. You want them one more time?
Yes.
Okay. First one, it's past my bedtime. My bedtime is 1 minute after I wake up in the morning. The second one, man, pizza is not a real thing. C, I am literally a peanut gallery. And D, trigger warning, graphic tease. Which is actually kind of offensive, but...
Yeah, maybe. Why'd you write it? He didn't write it. That's not the one.
You sure?
That's not the one. No.
Maybe I'm trying to throw you off by calling it offensive.
Maybe you are, but... Oh, God.
Maybe me saying that is just to throw you off again.
Maybe it is. Maybe you're an evil genius.
Well, we'll see if you get it right. Which one? What is the one that is... What is one does not belong? Which is not generally authentic O'Malley? Mm.
So there's bedtime. There's pizza.
Yes.
There's... The graphic tease is the fourth one. Tell me the third one again.
I am literally a peanut gallery.
I am literally... a peanut gallery. This is the hardest decision I've ever had to make. Because they're all incredibly retarded. Oh my god. I'm so drawn to the first one. But I have a... I want to think that you wouldn't put the wrong one. You wouldn't put the made up one in there twice.
First.
Yeah. You wouldn't put it first twice.
Maybe I'm doing it to throw you off again.
Yeah, I know. You're, again, evil genius.
I'm a gamesman.
You are. You very much are. I would hate to have you hunt me on a jungle island somewhere.
It's the most dangerous game.
It is the most dangerous game. That and Basque Ice Ball. Good Lord. I am going to say I'm going to go with number 1.
Bedtime?
Mhm. Bedtime.
That's wrong.
Unbelievable. Shut out again.
Wrong again.
Shut out again.
The one that I wrote is man, pizza is not a real thing.
Damn. That feels so authentic.
I know.
I think we need to write a comic book about Brian Lee O'Malley.
And well,
you can totally pull the character off.
I hate to break this to you, Eric. His publicist pays me to write his Twitter feed.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote all of these, actually.
Do you have to alter your state in any way to write these?
I just read.
If that's the case, you really have a very unfair advantage in this, because really you can just claim that anyone is wrong.
That's true. No, I don't have to alter myself in any way.
There's no drugs. You don't have to.
I'm a method actor. That's okay. It. You know, no like method.
Method.
I'm like De Niro. I just like inhabit his being. I think, comics artist has got really famous and now is kind of full of himself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then I get there and then I just write. So, folks, that was the Brian Lee O'Malley tweet quiz. Eric is now 0-2.
Yep.
After four,
if I'm still at zero, we know that I'm just a really bad guesser.
That knows that I have finally defeated him.
Well, you've beaten me twice.
No, those are only battles. There is a longer war here.
A longer war.
That we wage.
Yes.
We
are waging it.
We're waging it. So, moving on. It is time for Agonizing Breakdown!
It is such a classic.
Meow.
And then we meow.
We meow. This week, we're on my suggestion. Eric's coming in blind on this one. Is Oops. Silent War, written by David Hine with art by Fraser Irving. It's one of my favorite trades, arcs, ever. It details the Inhumans, mainly Black Bolt, Medusa, and their battles with the humanity shortly after House of M. It kind of is the only thing that I really don't like about it is that it's very like set in continuity. It's very set in that moment in the Marvel universe. Because now you look at Inhumans, completely different situation. But you know, if you don't look at everything, you just read it for itself. I think it really stands up. I really love it. We had discussed Fraser Irving's art on a previous book, and this is all Fraser Irving, and I think it's amazing. And I wanted Eric to read it and see what he felt.
What was the book?
Uncanny X-Men, yeah. The Uncanny X-Men where they go to hell.
Yeah, with Dormammu.
With Dormammu, yes.
Didn't realize that it was the same fella.
It is the same fella.
I could definitely see the similarities. Definitely, I think, even stronger. I mean, I definitely like the art in this book, but I think that X-Men book was stronger.
Okay.
I mean, it was just hands down gorgeous. This is definitely good, though.
Yeah, the story is kind of basically Inhumans are going to war with humanity, trying to get back they're the Terrigen mists, the crystals that allow them to transform, give them their powers. You know, every human goes through it when they're, you know, basically going through puberty. They go through these the mists and get their power, and their power kind of determines their where they are in the society.
Yeah.
Like, whatever they, or power is, it basically dictates, oh, you can fly? Well, then you do something that involves flying. You're good at cleaning? Then you're a janitor. Like, it's basically, that's kind of, they're like trade school, almost. They're placement test for life. And, like, some people are blessed with really, you know, cool powers, and some people are blessed with, you know, less useful powers. But they're all, you're usually pretty interesting. And it kind of goes through their battles with humanity trying to reclaim stuff, but it's also kind of existential crises with Black Bolt and Medusa, their relationship, and Black Bolt's brother, who is insane and manipulative and evil. And you get them dealing with the Avengers and Fantastic Four and stuff like that. Again, I love this book. It kind of what made me fell in love with Black Bolt, the character. And his struggle, like, I think he's really interesting because he is, he can't, his power is, his greatest power is his voice, and yet he rarely uses it, because it's so powerful. He can destroy a planet, basically, if he wanted to. He could destroy a planet. And he killed his parents, when he first got his powers. He talked in his sleep, and it killed them. And you kind of get a sense of his the restraint he has to the control he has to have over himself at all times. I really like the exploration of his character and his struggles with leadership of this group of, like, people, immigrants. These people have been moved around because the Inhumans used to live on Earth. They lived in the bottom of the sea near Atlantis. They used to live in the Himalayas, you know, away from people, and then they had to move to the moon. They've moved around multiple times. You know, they're unwanted.
They're kind of like native peoples being pushed around.
Yeah, kind of. I really like the similarities there, the stories you can tell using that metaphor. And again, the art, I think, is beautiful. Eric, what did you think? You are coming in blind. You've never read anything about this before. What did you think about it?
I think it's a strong suggestion. It's very strange and very dark. And the Inhumans are characters that I'm very vaguely familiar with. And they're some of, I think, the weirder creations of... it seems a lot of influence from Kirby. He just...
Yeah, it's his characters for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, although, you know, like, Stan Lee is given partial credit for that, it feels... very weird, very Kirby. I don't know. I see why you like Black Bolt so much. Just the exploration of him, and it. I don't know. It paints him as a terribly interesting character. And I can see eye to eye with a lot of the things that you're saying in this. I was a little confused about the statement that the book is trying to make, because it seems like, I don't know, it seems like it's trying to say a whole lot of different things, and it's you got to be pretty deep into it, I think, to get it all. But I liked a lot of the ideas, you know, the superheroes with mutually assured destruction, all the ties into, like, Cold War and the War on Terror and all of that, all those ideas. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, that it seems like it's trying to say a little bit too much. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there is a lot of, like, thematically.
Yeah.
It moves around a lot.
Yes. That would be my critique of it, is that it's trying to do a little too much in six issues, but it's still very strong. And I think a really great introduction to these characters is a lot of conflict and a lot of a lot of interesting things going on here. I had a really good time reading it.
Yeah. Again, thematically, I do enjoy, like, I love that scene with the Sentry and Black Bolt.
Oh God, yeah, that was amazing.
That's one of my favorite scenes in this, where they're just kind of just sitting there staring at each other.
Yeah.
Knowing that either one of them could easily kill millions of people, and if either of them gets involved, that's what will probably happen, or what could happen, and they kind of live with this every day. And Sentry eventually went insane and had to have the Hulk kill him. No, it was Thor. Thor killed him, excuse me.
Hmm.
So that kind of speaks to that he was so powerful, and he could not control his power. He asked to be killed so that he wouldn't, you know, have to deal with it anymore. And, you know, Black Bolt is now in the Fantastic Four. Actually, Medusa is actually on the Earthbound Fantastic Four team right now.
Hmm.
But Fraser Irving, I'm a big fan of everything he does, and I really enjoy the art style on it. It's beautiful and really dark, like Eric said.
Hmm. It is. It's a bit of a downer.
This yes,
book, it's so heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's not like reading
an Adventure Time arc.
No, it is not. It is deep, deep darkness. Like Marines, you get all the Marines volunteering to become superpowered, knowing that they'll die.
Yeah,
you guys, they're told you will die if you accept this treatment and become superpowered mm-hmm. briefly, and they go, everyone volunteers. I think my favorite thing in the art is Medusa's hair.
Yeah, it's really fun the way it's done.
I don't think any artist I've seen communicates her power and that essential aspect of her character, because it like the way her hair moves from panel to panel, it's like another limb, like it's part of her body language, and that's really amazing to me that you see that. Like when she's angry, it gets angry. When she is, you know, in lust, you see that. When she's scared or sad, her hair shows it. And I really like that. As long as the feud between Black Bolt and his brother, his insane brother, I like how they represent the madness in him. With the, like, crazy tentacled monster in his head that only Luna can see.
He kind of looks like Dylan Moran from Black Books.
He does, kind of, actually. Yeah, you're right.
I was going to say Neil Gaiman, but I'm like, he looks a lot more like Dylan Moran. So that would be really funny to see him play that role. He'd be very inappropriate.
Very inappropriate. Be the awful worst casting.
It would be very poor casting.
But you enjoyed the art in this? You enjoyed,
yeah.
I know you like...
I think he's a hell of a talent. And it's sort of adds a kind of style that you do not see in comics, you know? It's not... It's painterly, but it's not Alex Rossi.
No.
You know, because people are trying to, they want to be Alex Ross, you know, and I think that this is, it's unique enough that I look at it and I don't think Alex Ross, but it's got that kind of realism to it, you know, he's got that level of ability for sure. And whether, I'm not a huge Alex Ross fan, but whether you think that or not, the man has tons of ability.
Yeah, I would say the when Black Bolt is on, like the empty space in the moon, and his like howl of anguish,
the reflection. That part, or reflection. Where are we at?
No, when he sees Medusa kiss his brother.
Ah, yes.
And then he runs and flies out of. out of Adelon, their base, and like just goes to the empty vacuum of space, basically, where he can, you know, howl in anguish and not damage anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's
communicates his pain and torment. Like, and that's the thing I love, because he's so reserved. Mm-hmm. He has to be. He, as a leader, he makes it like to be as like stoic and unreadable as possible, because he feels like that as a leader, that's his responsibility to not, you know, to not be, I don't know the right word, to not be too demonstrative,
emotional,
demonstrative, be even keeled, I guess. Yeah. And, you see him break, basically. He's broken, and it's not by anything that happens to his people. It's because his wife is being manipulated by his brother.
So full of strange characters.
Yeah, I love the oddball aspects of that, too.
Yeah,
that's absolutely. It's really...
That throws dreams at people?
Yeah, that is... there's not a lot of levity in this book.
No,
but I really did like that scene when they're doing battle with Ares, and he throws a nightmare at him, and he's like chest deep in blood,
yeah,
and it's the blood of all the enemies he's killed, and he's like, only this much. So there's some black humor in it. It's not, there's not a lot of it. It's kind of a dark, sad book. My only other critique of it is that it. You never get resolution to this storyline, really.
Mm-hmm.
Him being... he gets... Right after this, kind of got finished. This happened right in the era of House of M, and then Civil War happened. And Civil War, and then Secret Invasion happened. And in Secret Invasion, it's revealed that Black Bolt's been a Skrull. But you don't know how much and when, and it kind of leaves a very kind of vague area about what happened here, like afterwards, and they never really confront it. Kind of after this happens, Maximus kind of becomes like more of a mischievous but ultimately friendly character, which he's not in this at all.
I was gonna say that seems like a real departure from this.
Yeah, but
that's what you get when you have a billion different people writing stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And I really wish they could have done this and had another 6 issues like that, this, and explored it, that this story, and just went finished it, and that bothers me. And that's kind of the big downfall, being set in a universe with heavy continuity. When you're using these characters other places, you can't always finish stories because they kind of make them null and void. But if you don't read this, you know, and you kind of ignore everything, I love it. It's available as a trade. I actually bought all the issues individually. I was going through my comics this last week, and I found all the individual issues as well. But I could not recommend this more. I love this. It's one of my favorite stories in mainstream superhero comics. Eric, recommend it?
I think so. It's an interesting insertion point into these characters, but like you said, it's pretty different from you know how they all are now. So
yeah, I would just say it's I think the character behind it in Black Bolt and in all the other characters is still valid. Yeah. It's still valid. The action, some of the stuff that happens. Obviously, I mean, Fantastic Four had battled the Inhumans multiple times now, but they're thinking about making a Black Inhumans television show, actually, where it kind of like, because of obviously with the success of Game of Thrones, they want to set it kind of like that, where like,
interesting,
you know, you have like the court. And there's infighting and multiple houses in the Inhumans, and they're all kind of trying to win the throne, I guess, from Black Bolt.
And they live on a totally rad city on the moon.
I think they would set it on Earth, actually.
Boo!
Boo Earns.
Yeah, I'm not saying Boo Earns.
But if you do enjoy this, I would also recommend the Inhumans graphic novel, Marvel Knights series by Paul Jenkins, which we discussed with Mr. Jenkins last episode. That's also really good. Not connected to this story. This is back when they were still on Earth. But it really does. It also is another good insight into Black Bolt's character and all the Inhumans as well.
I'm looking through the New Avengers book again because he's in that.
Black Bolt, yeah, he's part of the Illuminati.
The Illuminati.
Yeah, he ends up being the Skrull in the original Illuminati, which launches into Secret Invasion, which again was not a super strong crossover either event. But
he's in it, but doesn't say anything.
He doesn't say anything. I know. He never talks. Except I think there is in the Secret Invasion's Inhumans a little. I think it's a 3-issue or 4-issue event book. There was one particular scene I really love where he's holding us. He was captured by the Skrulls and he escapes. And one of the Skrulls is not aware that his powers they get like turned off basically. The Skrulls turn off his powers, but one of the Skrulls is not aware that they're back on, and he's escaping, and they try and stop him. He grabs the Skrull by the hand, and like utters a sub-audible sound, basically like a sound we couldn't hear, and it turns him to goo, except for like his hand.
It goos him up.
It goos him, and he just like lands on the floor like as a big pile of goo.
A big pile of Skrull goo.
Skrull goo, it's green.
Of course it is.
Of course it is. So that's it this week for Classic Breakdown. That was Silent War by David Hein and Fraser Irving. Finally, we're coming back to Random Character Generator.
I can hear your smile.
I said it with a smile. Because it's... It's a lovely segment that every week brings me delight. We mentioned this last week, and I thought we should kind of look into it, do what we can with our... And, you know, we had Alan Moore Vampire Hunter. Eric threw that out there last week.
Yeah, but Vampire Hunter's too beat up.
Vampire's been kind of used and abused.
It's been done to death.
So what about an Alan Moore superhero-ish... Alan Moore in a dystopian future.
You go.
Okay, I was going to say, like, if there is an apocalypse tomorrow or the government... Well, the government already has taken control, but you know what I mean. Like, we got a kind of a V for Vendetta kind of thing happening, and Alan Moore was the superhero. If Alan Moore was V, or if there's... It's like a fallout happened, and he's the wanderer of the wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
What would his story be? If he had powers or whatever.
He's a wandering magician.
Is that where we're going? He's going to be a magician?
I mean, what do you
it's
mean?
It's what he is.
What do you mean is going to be?
I know. He doesn't wander a lot. Yeah. But he is a magician.
He stays in his apartment.
Yeah.
And casts spells on his oatmeal.
Go down. I like my oatmeal soft.
This is very Sean Connery.
I know. That's my problem with my Alan Moore, is that it lulls into Sean Connery eventually, occasionally. Where do you want to do like the wasteland thing, or do you want to try and do like him versus the government?
I kind of see it a little bit like Transmetropolitan, in that it's a big... It's the culture of steam.
Culture of steam. So he's fighting. He's like, he's in the world, but out of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like Transmetropolitan is the quote unquote superhero version, or you know, comic book version of Hunter Thompson, gonzo journalist. So this has got to be the culture of steam version of Alan Moore, who is a writer / wizard in the future.
In the future is what is his goal? Is he trying to capture this? Is he trying to slow down this culture? Or I'm trying to think.
That's a good question. The motivation there, because is that within his character? Would he really? He's not particularly the kind of person that you know, he doesn't long for the simplicity of the past necessarily.
No, but it seems like when he's saying that in that documentary, he's not doesn't think it's a good thing. It seems to imply that it's too much.
Well, it really implies that it's kind of terrifying. You know,
yeah.
That there's something that we should be afraid of, but maybe I don't know. He's trying. He's like the Watcher in my mind. That he just is trying to observe humanity as it comes closer and closer to the inevitable brink as we tick towards midnight.
I see him kind of like a Doctor Who kind of figure.
That's very interesting.
He doesn't travel through time and everything.
Yeah.
But he's a watcher. He sees everything and everything within this. He hits the things that are terrifying in this culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The things in the steam.
Yeah.
He goes. Yeah. He fights them.
Yes.
Maybe.
You say Doctor Who, it makes me think of sort of the way the storytelling is in The Sandman, and that it's sort of based around like these characters, but it's not necessarily entirely about them. It's about the stories like around him in some ways.
Yes, he's in this steam. For to continue using this metaphor, mm-hmm. and he's navigating it.
Yeah.
And he's seeking out the horrors and mm-hmm. and making them safe and defending the unknowing public who are unaware of all this happening. They're just going about their day blindly accepting the whatever change is thrust upon them.
Do you know who else is a character in this?
Who else?
Steve Ditko.
Steve Ditko.
Absolutely.
Is he like the Question, or
is he what? He's like the Question, or he's like Rorschach.
Like Rorschach.
Yeah.
Okay. He's that's Steve Ditko. That makes sense.
Yeah.
He is Mr. A.
He is Mr. A.
Mr. A. It's Steve Ditko who's gone insane and thinks he is Mr. A.
Yes.
That's good. And Alan Moore.
He's gonna throw boiling fat at Alan Moore's face.
No, he's a villain. I was going to say that they tag team.
He doesn't necessarily, you know. It depends on the context.
Oh, so Alan Moore just goes. He just moves out of the way and goes. Oh, that Ditko.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, it depends that they're not. They wouldn't necessarily be on opposite sides. That they differ philosophically on a great many things.
Yes,
they're not
enemies. Know,
when their interests are aligned, they have no reason to
not
try
to.
They're not like He-Man and Skeletor,
right? So they have a they'll have uneasy alliances from time to time.
Yeah,
separate and go their own separate ways. It's like mm-hmm. like Captain America and the Punisher.
Yeah,
kind of thing where like
good. I was gonna say it's like the I keep coming back to the Sandman. It's like the they're like different of the Endless sort of. You know, that that they sometimes, you know, like desire is trying to kill dream and, you know, sometimes they see each other and they're civil to one another. And, you know, there's different points in their history where they got along well, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. I can see that. So is Ditko, does he go? I think he goes by Mr. A, and only mm-hmm. Alan Moore knows it's Ditko.
Mm-hmm.
And he, out of respect for him, he doesn't reveal his identity because he thinks mm-hmm. he knows. Because he, as well as bad, he also does good.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the black comes the white.
Yes.
Dear God, that song.
It's amazing. It's the
yes.
Best.
Yes.
I think did I post it yet? I think I posted it.
I linked it to the our last.
Yeah, you did.
The last episode.
I posted Warren Ellis talking about Alan Moore's eating habits.
That's good too.
That's what I posted.
So who's the first villain? Who's the first monster in the steam that he encounters? What do you think?
It's hard to say. I think. Do you know what I think what is on my mind is I think that all of their powers are kind of like metafiction-y.
Yes, that's appropriate.
Yeah, that Alan Moore has like magical writing powers, and they basically create the universe that they live in while they're living in it.
So it's like more literary Green Lantern kind of thing, where his will determines like creation of objects, or
maybe that's not a bad way to look at it.
But not like he doesn't like make giant fists, but
no,
where he can create something. Mm-hmm. Using, does he do this on the fly in battle, or can he
can, but I don't see him as he's the kind of person that eschews the fighting a little bit. He kind of stands back and lets things happen in a kind of reserved way. It's more about,
he's won the battle before it starts.
Yes,
it's preparation.
Yeah,
he's a preparation. He sees five steps ahead and is already mm-hmm. knows yeah, what he's a Boy Scout.
By the time you know you're even on the board, he's already won the game.
Right. You know,
that kind of thing. And that's where the fun is in the story, is watching how it all rolls out.
So he's like a Sherlock Holmes almost.
Mm-hmm. No, he's got, you know, these great metafiction powers, these godlike powers, but it's mostly his intellect.
I would say that his main villain probably should be like a propaganda machine or something, mm-hmm. like an AI. I don't think it's even human. I think mm-hmm. it's programmed to create the perfect propaganda, and it's trying to basically influence the minds of everyone. And he is, it will create new problems
mm-hmm.
week to week.
It's like deeply ingrained. Yeah, it's like deeply ingrained in, or embedded, I should say, in culture and the government. And I think that's where Steve Ditko, fits together, that he's so, you know, fuck the man, I hate the government, that's where the uneasy alliance comes in.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. So, and then I think there could be, you know, monsters of the week that aren't necessarily byproducts of the mm-hmm. the main bad, but, you know, you could have just him encountering weird things.
Yeah. Yeah, in a very Doctor Who sort of way.
Yeah. I think it'd work well. Why is it? They're looking for the next Doctor Who. Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
It would. He'd be the surliest Doctor ever.
That's true. He would be.
Stand aside, Christopher Eccleston.
Yes, I was about to say, Eccleston can't even match up to him.
Yeah.
With the surliness.
It's
not even. I mean, it wouldn't even be close. Alan Moore's surliness is off the charts.
Off the charts. It's a surliness of steam.
I was going to say he's 11. He goes. He takes the surliness up to 11.
He does.
It's more than 10. It is more than 10.
You'd beat me to it.
So we got Alan Moore, metafictional, metaphysical, metatextual superhero with a sometimes assist of Mr. A, played by Steve Ditko, versus the propaganda machine in a culture of steam.
The culture of steam.
Swimming in a culture of steam.
Yes.
I think that's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was fun. It's a little too serious. We didn't come up with anything dumb laughing at Alan Moore.
I think
we'll just have to have oatmeal breaks at the end of every book.
Oatmeal breaks, where it's just him eating a bowl of oatmeal, and like he just dispenses some folky wisdom.
Yeah,
some Alan Moore-isms.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Bob Newhart show. Not Bob Newhart. Bob Newhart show, right? Where he did a joke. Didn't they tell a joke? There's that Welcome Back, Kotter. Or did they steal the bit from... I can't remember. I know Welcome Back, Kotter had a joke at the end of every episode. But I thought Bob Newhart did something similar.
I don't have the foggiest. You're talking about things over my head.
No Nick at Night. No Nick at Night for you?
I didn't watch a whole lot of it, no.
Jeez. You would love Bob Newhart.
Would I?
It's a really good comedy. Yeah, I love Bob Newhart. He's so dry. It's really good.
Huh.
Either of his shows. He had two shows, and they're both really, really... They're funny. Really good. They're made in the 70s and 80s. They're good regardless.
Well, it's important that things be good.
Exactly. So that's also another suggestion for the week. Bob Newhart show. So that was Random Character Generator, folks. Please don't sue us, Alan Moore, for using your name and properties without your permission. I think that brings us to a close here, Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on Facebook at Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. You can find us on iTunes. Please search for us and download, subscribe, review. More reviews, more listeners.
Very, very important. Please, please help us. Many of you know us. I mean, why the hell not? Help us out here.
Help us. You are our only hope.
Yes.
Yes. We also have a Tumblr, which I haven't put anything on yet, but it's handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com.
Well, I just found a picture of He-Man and Skeletor eating pizza that we should put on there.
Well, you do know what they say. Man, pizza is not even real.
Pizza is not even real. This is a drawing of pizza, and it's not real.
So you can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Cereal, MixmasterCereal. You can find me on Tumblr at MixmasterCereal.tumblr.com. I run a wrestling Tumblr also. It's called HittingTheMark.tumblr.com. I'm on Facebook. If you search my name, you want to be my friend, I'm sure I'd love you as my friend on Facebook.
Mm.
Eric, where can they find you online?
Oh, you can get my Twitter, MR Bad Example, Mr. Bad Example on Twitter, MR Bad Example.
And he is one.
You absolutely know it, brother. My portfolio is at freewillunlimited.com, and you can see an amalgam of the various articles I've written on Photoshop tricks, etc., on ericzgoodnight.com. Big list of all that. You can see a lot of the different things I've gotten up to online. ericzgoodnight.com.
So that's it. That's it for this week. This is Handsome Boys Comics Hour, episode 6. Have a good one, folks.